You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
That was Vexed by School Fair, just off their new album, Bird the Kid. I've got Dee Stevens from School Fair on the phone right now with me. Kia ora, Dee, how are you this morning?
Kia ora, Sophia. I'm pretty good, thanks. How are you going?
I am fabulous. I've had a lovely show this morning and super excited to be speaking with you about this one.
Great.
Yeah, I just want to say I'm absolutely loving this album. It's been so on repeat for me over the past week. And I was actually playing one of your guys' tracks from Gorse on the Hill, a couple of weeks ago on my show, and I was asking the listeners, God, when are they releasing new music? Because I was waiting for it. And then you guys posted on Instagram like a couple days before releasing this album. And you can only imagine my excitement. I was like, oh my God, I feel like I manifested this.
What are the odds?
That's great. So very pleased. But for those who don't know School Fair, how would you kind of describe your guys' music?
It's a really hard question to answer for me anyway. Maybe it might be easier for one of the other members in the band, but it's sort of, School Fair is not really like a band per se. I mean, it is a group of us, but it's sort of just like this little side project thing that appeared one day when we were all kind of hanging out and making music in Dunedin. And it just sort of, yeah, so I think that School Fair's music it started out quite sort of guitar, sort of angular guitar, riffy, heavy, but with this sort of poetry sort of laced on top of it. And then, but over time it's sort of become a bit more obscure and kind of a mixture and of all kinds of styles, really. But School Fair is just more of like a weird, strange, mysterious universe that Finlay kind of illustrates with his poetry, which you can kind of hear on the record.
For sure. And that's just the spoken word and the poetry over top of your music is just something I just absolutely love and has really drawn me to you guys. I think it's just such a beautiful way of putting two things I really love together, and it's so cool to hear, particularly in Aotearoa. I need to do better research, but I'm not sure of many other bands that are doing a lot of that, which is really cool. But what kind of inspired your guys' choice as a band to put words and music together in this way?
I mean, as I described, it was sort of just like a happenstance thing. Like, it began with Samisi and I sort of, we were actually making sort of dub music on like a four track tape machine, and we were just sort of fucking around, and then Hamish stopped by, and then we ended up sort of transferring that to that kind of guitar stuff, and then Finlay had just driven the length of the country in this green van that he used to have, and just sort of stopped off at our spot, and just sort of jumped on the microphone. And he's a really amazing poet. Like, he's an incredible writer, and it turns out he's also an incredible speaker and performer, and there wasn't really any inspiration behind the decision to do it. It just sort of happened and then ended up being really great. But a great thing that Finlay can do is, and Samisi too, is that they're both able to kind of write while we're jamming or while we're writing the music. So a lot of the words that you hear are actually quite impromptu and sort of just come out of the music. And but then somehow a lot of Finlay's poetry seems to inform the universe around the music too. So it's this nice kind of interplay thing that happens quite mysteriously, but definitely wasn't like a this is how we should do it sort of decision.
I love that, and I guess I was a bit interested to know a little bit more about what that kind of writing process looked like. You said it, you know, it can be quite impromptu, but does it tend to be one of them bringing a piece of writing to the band, or is it quite collaborative?
I'd say it's mostly collaborative, and with that first record, it was the takes that you hear on the record are the first sort of you know, the music kind of manifesting itself in the recording process. Like, we just sort of wrote it and then recorded the part. Like, maybe it was the guitar part first, and then we recorded that, recorded the drums over it, and then that's kind of it. It wasn't that people brought music to it and then we recorded it. It was just sort of all in one go. But with this second record, there was a couple of songs that we'd played at the very few shows that we've ever done that we hadn't recorded, and so those were pre-existing. But for, I'd say over half of what you hear on that second record is also just sort of improv and jams that we've kind of edited down.
I love that. And do you find that with this album you guys have kind of come back to similar or, you know, reoccurring ideas lyrically with the writing process?
Similar as the first record?
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, I feel like Finlay, I can't really speak for Finlay, but I feel like the first record was quite kind of this jovial, almost theatrical world of characters that he was painting, that kind of was the school fear, I guess. Like, it was this fear of like a troupe of kind of like strange characters that were kind of in this kind of weird dark world. But I feel like with this second record, it's a bit of a mixed bag, and I feel like he paints a bit more of like an abstract landscape or something with a lot of his imagery and his words. But I feel like it's a lot more personal as well. I don't know, but I'm not sure if I'm the right person to answer that question.
No, fair enough, absolutely. And I did want to ask, because a couple of you, including yourself, are also part of Marlon's Dreaming, which I think it's so classic, as I've found so many times that particularly in Aotearoa music, you have multiple bands that you love, and then you suddenly realize that they're all got the same people behind them. And I found that with you guys, which I just love. But School Fair is quite sonically different to Marlon's Dreaming. But, you know, Marlon's Dreaming has been releasing music for a lot longer. You've spoken about it a little bit more, but what kind of made you guys want to experiment with genre a little bit more with this project?
I don't know. Maybe School Fair was born out of that desire to kind of make something a bit more strange and a bit more challenge, like music that challenges us. You know, I feel like in the process in Marlon's Dreaming is much more. It is collaborative still, but Semi-C tends to just write a lot, and then we flesh it out as a band, and it's a bit more traditional, I guess, and just sort of set on these like really beautiful songs that Semisi writes that maybe are more set in this kind of conventional world, but in still a great way. But then with School Fair, I think it was yeah, as I said, it was just sort of experimenting that it was that is what sort of birthed it. So I don't know if there was an intention behind, like, we have to do this because Marlins doesn't do it, or this is what we want to try. I mean, actually, with that, with the second record that's just come out, there definitely was there was for sure a desire to try and push the boat, I guess. But there was, yeah, there was never any discussions around what style should it be, or what should we, what sort of music should we play, or it just sort of all falls out of these, like, it's actually just really funny to us. Like, we laugh a lot when we're in the studio and making this stuff. Like, there's a lot of humor in it, and even if it's like a serious sounding song or poem, I feel like we end up laughing at it a lot, and it's all just quite silly, but we're not taking it so seriously that we're worrying about what it is or isn't, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It just happens quite organically, which I love. And this last album you guys released, Gorse on a Hill, was mixed on a 4-track cassette recorder, which I really love, this kind of minimalist approach to recording. When you recorded this album, Bird the Kid, did you take a similar approach, or what was the recording process for this one?
Well, when we decided to do the second record because Finlay was going to move away, and it was more of just like a necessity to get it done before he was gone. And so there was a lot of discussions around how we should do it, and Hamish and I were very adamant on getting the 4-track out again, because that seemed so impervious to like what that first record was. And but Samisi and Finlay were more sort of like, now let's try and like make it hi-fi and like go into the studio and just do something completely different, which it really scared me a bit, but it ended up being really great. And so the process was, we just did it in sort of like, the recording was in more or less 2 days really, but also overnight, so it was like 48 hours basically of just us in the studio with all these microphones everywhere and instruments. And we just sort of, as I said, we had a couple of songs that were written already that we recorded in that time, but for the most part it was just a jam. Yeah, we just played, then they would be writing away in the corner, and then we'd, you know, but the difference with a 4-track and, you know, like a big multi-track studio is that we could have more than 4 instruments, you know, going on at once. So it was like we were quite bad at understanding on the 4-track how to put multiple things on one track, so we'd end up just being like, oh, okay, we've filled up the 4 tracks, that's that song done then. But then what, in this new record it was like, oh, let's like cut the drums up, or let's like add like a, you know, like a big sea of these reverb-y guitar, like, you know, the it was kind of boundless, but still kind of rooted in us four just sort of playing together, which is the root of it, between that, you know, ties those two records together.
For sure, beautiful. And kind of a silly question, I guess, but in You Only Love Me Because You Want Something, which has got to be one of my favorite tracks off the album, there's snippets of a dog barking and some other kind of audio clips throughout the end of the track, which I think just really makes the song. And I think it's so fun hearing stuff like that kind of appear through a track. But I guess I was interested to know, like, was there any kind of story behind how you sourced those clips?
There is a story, and there's certainly as a yeah, I don't know if I can answer that question, actually.
Okay, no, that's so fine. That's so fine.
I'll just leave it up to the listeners to kind of decipher what's in there, but it's a little bit, it's not very specific.
Okay, it's a mystery. It's for us to continue to ponder about.
We'll say that.
Well, gorgeous. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me. Those were all the questions I had for today. I'm going to play that track that we just spoke about, You Only Love Me Because You Want Something. But thank you so much. It's an incredible album, and I'm so pleased to have spoken to you about it. Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, no, thanks so much for the chat. It was great. And I really appreciate you enjoying the music and putting it on the air.
Of course, of course. Well, thank you so much, Dee. We're going to listen to You Only Love Me Because You Want Something. This is School Fair. You're on BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.